Deshaun, I heard after game one of the NBA Finals, a lot of people, a lot of experts, so-called experts, media types, former players, saying this is over. Four games, might be a sweep, might be a gentleman's sweep. Five games, won't go past six, we'll never get to a game seven. You can start engraving Denver Nuggets as champions. And that is not what we saw in game two.
You know, it's funny. I never listened to any of that. Listen, Miami definitely show improved enough for me. I've spoken so much about, you know, some of the comparisons that I've made to the 04 Pistons. And, you know, maybe don't have the star player that maybe a lot of people think that, you know, with the exception of maybe Jimmy Butler, and even then he's probably fringe to many people. But when there's just a will, you know, that someone has and they're determined and, you know, all the chips are, you know, against you and, you know, you're kind of playing with house money. That's a very, very dangerous person. And that's not, you know, a position that you want to be in if you're the Denver Nuggets, where I feel like they do possess much of the pressure throughout this series. I can't imagine, if people out there who love the betting and gambling and all that, I couldn't imagine at any point Miami being the front runners to win this series until maybe if they're in a position to go up 3-1. But, you know,
Denver is favored tomorrow night in game three. That's
I think they'll be favored in game four and probably five going back home. I mean, this is one of those things where people are just not reality is this. People are just not going to give Miami their respect until they're holding the Larry O'Brien trophy over their head in the middle of the court being presented by the commissioner, Adam Silver. I think that's just the reality of it. But I counted out Miami way too much to count them out in this series.
Yeah.
And honestly, for a team that like Denver, who's unproven.
How much of that skepticism, that doubt of the Heat, stems from the fact that they're an 8 seed, how much from they were the worst scoring team in basketball? They've certainly answered all the questions in the playoffs whenever you beat a 1 seed and a 2 seed. But as you say, people have that show-me attitude with this. And I don't know whether it's questions about Jimmy Butler being able to do it again or exactly what it is, or maybe there's just respect for Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, I think it's all of that. It's a combination of so many things. I think the size, you know, matters for a lot of people when it comes to, you know, to this matchup. Maybe even some of the depth. Maybe some of the depth on the bench. When you got a two-time MVP, and then you got someone like a Jimmy Butler, who again, a lot of people probably think is a fringe superstar in this league and can't be the number one option on a team. I mean, when you just look up the definition in your imaginary dictionary, Jimmy Butler's name just really isn't the one that is at the top of that list and pops out, sticks out like a sore thumb. But, you know, even in other cases where I think that you have a lot of the, you know, undrafted players and the defensive, from a defensive standpoint, how elite that they typically are and just that culture and all that stuff is honestly things that don't move the needle for a lot of people's personal interests. Take personal interests out of it for a second, because we know that, you know, people love Pac-12 and Big 12, you know, football and just running the score up nowadays. If it ain't flashy, we don't want to have any parts of it. And that's just not what basketball is. Me growing up right there in that town where you are in Michigan, I've always been taught and told that defense is what wins the championship.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that, you know, like it, love it, hate it, or anything in between, we embrace that. And again, I think I made this comparison last week. It's just another reason why we enjoy and love Michigan State basketball the way that we do, because it is the culture, because it is the physicality, because it is the back up against the wall or chips against you and being that underdog and showing and proving. And I think this is just another example of that.
So much is made of the stars in the NBA, but I want to talk about the coaches, because they can be stars too.
Yeah.
And Eric Spoelstra, I think now genuinely regarded as good a coach as there is in the NBA, if not clearly the best, made a lineup change. Kevin Love came in, and that seemed to change a few things. Do you think that Michael Malone now, it's his move, that heading back, he's going to do something different?
Probably. I'm not sure what that different is. And guess what? That's why he's getting paid all the big Jack Ebling money to figure those things out. That being said, you know, this isn't for no reason. This is by design, them doing this. And, I mean, listen, I don't know why people – I mean, I understand that the season was the season this year. Miami didn't look great, especially coming off of a year where they were, you know, the top seed in the East and all of these other things. But for that exact reason, that you don't count them out. I mean, just last year they were number one in the East. And, you know, there's this such thing that Jimmy Butler will downplay as playoff Jimmy. This is the playoffs, and this is where, you know, guys come to play when the lights shine the brightest. And that's exactly what he's doing. And not having Tyler Hero throughout all of this, I think they really needed Max Strus in game two to do what he did, rebounding from, you know, game one, where he went 0 for 10. I'm sorry, 0 for 10. 0 is a letter, I think. But doing all of those things, though, Jack, I think is – and Pat Riley, the mastermind, I guess, behind it all. I can't remember. I heard something crazy. 25% of the NBA finals that have been won in the last whatever, he's been a part of these things.
He's been in 19 of them.
Oh, my goodness. It's crazy. That's ridiculous. I mean, credit to him and being a coach and just being a guy in the front office and all these different things. I mean, that's not luck. That's by design. That's somebody who knows what the hell that they're doing. Honestly, it's really kind of hard to go against Miami. People think it's hard to go against Denver. I think it's hard to go against Miami.
Yeah. So when you think about Michael Porter Jr., and he got blasted by Michael Malone after the last game. It wasn't hard to understand who he was pointing to. He talked about everybody else and left him out, but talked about a lack of effort, lack of focus, bunch of dumb plays, going the wrong place, leaving guys wide open. How does that happen to someone who is that talented?
Youth. He's young, you know. For a guy who really, I think he's probably seeing the most time that he's seen since he's been in the NBA. Obviously, everybody knows about the back injury. I mean, we are talking about a guy who was anticipated to be the number one pick in what I think is maybe a top three draft in 2018. Guaranteed, in my book anyways, of the top five draft. He was expected to be that top guy, not DeAndre Ayton. And then the injury thing happens, but expectations come along, you know, with those things. And so, all things being considered, you have to be held accountable. You're healthy, you're out there playing, we're holding you accountable. They know that they need it. You know, Aaron Gordon took on a big run of the load in the first game. We know that, you know, Miami was going to make adjustments to that. And that's when Michael Porter Jr., the young star, we've seen it with so many, you know, different guys. I can't remember the one guy from the Lakers that came over from San Antonio. He had a big game with, you know, as a youthful guy when it was his turn in the playoffs. And then I think there was another guy throughout the playoffs. Can't remember his name. Sounds like bad radio, but I promise I know what I'm talking about. That. this is Michael Porter Jr.'s opportunity to step up and shine and have one of those games as the Michael Porter Jr. game. And he didn't do that. When you're at home and you're at Mile High, you're going back to Miami, it's going to be crazy. And you got to take advantage when you're at home and you're Denver Nuggets, because that is what you have built and established all of your success on.
You know, the NBA playoffs and pro playoffs in general, other than the Super Bowl, Deshaun, are best of sevens. It's not single game knockouts, not like the NCAA tournament. And there's good and bad with that. Certainly, you get a truer champion if you have a longer series, less chance for one upset, one bad day. You and I saw that sitting in Columbus, Ohio, watching Purdue lose to Fairleigh Dickinson and watching Memphis lose to Florida Atlantic at the time, it seemed like an upset, but it really wasn't. But right. certainly the Purdue loss, and people who said the other night, well, how in the world did Miami go into Denver and do that? It happens.
It does, Jack, and I even brought this exact same analogy up the other day when someone says, well, you know, the instant go-to is Miami's not supposed to be here. Miami's right. not supposed to be here. I'm not one that believes that. Guess what? Fairleigh Dickinson was the one that wasn't supposed to be there.
That's right.
To be quite honest.
That's right.
That's what not supposed to be there looks like to me. But nonetheless, I mean, listen, Miami did what they were supposed to do. Some people are going to say, oh, you know, the game against the Atlanta Hawks, they knew exactly what they were doing. Like, it was by design, I don't know, to get the matchups that they got. But sometimes you're just destined. Sometimes you're just lucky. But I don't think, you know, that I knew in the moment that they go up 3-0 on Boston, and Boston comes all the way back. Sorry, Boston, Rob. But they come all the way back, and then they go on their home floor in a game seven. No, we're not talking about one of these little teeny tiny markets. This is Boston we're talking about. And you blow them out off of their floor. I really felt like at that moment that Miami was going to make a statement in the next series, especially when everybody was going to likely be taking the two-time MVP Nikola Jokic and the Denver Nuggets. They're sitting there waiting. Of course, now the excuse or whatever, what have you, is automatically going to be, well, maybe Denver had too much rest. Well, that wasn't the excuse for game one when they took care of business against Miami. It surely won't be the excuse for game two. So we'll see going back to Miami.
Hmm. What about the fan base there now? How much impact do you think they will have on these two games? Because in the Eastern Conference Finals, home team only won twice in seven games.
Yeah, yeah. I can definitely see Denver sneaking one out in Miami. I know this is going to sound a bit crazy. I'm not predicting or projecting for it to happen, but it wouldn't surprise me, if I'm just being honest, to see Miami win both of these games in Miami. A surprise, no. But, you know, it's going to take more than just me saying it for it to happen. No, the road teams have been really good throughout, to your point, really good throughout the playoffs. And so Denver has their opportunity, but Miami has the hold down there. And I mean, listen, people talking about Miami's dead tired. They're coming off a seven-game series. They're all dead tired. Nobody's 100% healthy right now. And all the excuses are just going to be out of the window. For all those people who are automatically made their excuses up before the series started, we're just kind of happy to be here. You know, we weren't really supposed to be here, and kind of playing with house money and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. I don't want to hear that either. You go out there to play the game, and you play the game to win.
So I'm looking at the situation now in Detroit. And everyone wants to know how far the Pistons are from being in this conversation. When you're getting top five draft picks, obviously you've got some work to do. But when you're paying a coach $78.5 million dollars over 6 years, that's more than $13 million per year, you don't just expect him to be a babysitter. What impact do you think Monty Williams can have? And he's already formulating a staff with head coaching experience.
Yeah, he is. And is that highest paid coach in the league, or highest paid
ever.
Coach in history?
Ever.
History. Yeah,
yeah.
History. So, yeah. Wow. I hope it's going to be money well worth spent as a secret Detroit Pistons, you know, fan. But it's got to count. It's got to matter. And we've seen, you know, Monty Williams get to very close to the pinnacle, but then, you know, failing. I think that the staff that he's putting together should be pretty good and can help. But he's not the only one with a really good staff. And these guys are young. You know, it's crazy to think that, you know, coming into the season, most people said, well, you know, watch out for this Detroit team. They could be kind of dangerous.
Right.
I'm not saying they're going to do this and that, but they might just be a year away. And then you saw what they look like this year. Granted, some asterisks with Cade Cunningham,
right,
injuries and whatever, what have you. But then people are like, I might want to take back what I said about being a year away. So I understand all of those things, but I think that the thing that they're doing, very much like the Miami Heat, which I actually like to see, is they're building the culture. It's starting to look like Detroit basketball again. Maybe at the bottom of the barrel, you know, of the NBA. How many years before they can get to this point? I'm not sure. I don't know that. Hopefully it's within the next handful of years, that's for sure. I feel the most comfortable saying that.
Right.
But who knows? I just like to see the grit and the guys playing hard and formulating a roster that looks like Detroit basketball and guys that want to compete. And I like the way that that looks on paper anyway.
All right, one more thing, Deshaun, about the league. And we keep hearing about LeBron not necessarily wanting to put together Miami Heat 2.0 in terms of a super team, but saying that they need more in L.A. besides him and Anthony Davis. And I looked at some of the contributions from role players there in the playoffs, and I thought, you know, pretty good job. Some of those guys had done a good job, but you know, there are cap considerations, and I guess you can always pay the tax and do some things. But do you think that the Lakers are going to add a Kyrie Irving or somebody else and really blow it out next year?
Yeah, doing a good job. Did a good job for sure this year after the trade deadline, where they, you know, obviously kind of hit their peak, but. It's going to sound like bad radio, Jack, but I got to say, I don't know. LeBron James, I don't know. We're hearing so many different things. Oh, well, they're going to bring, you know, Trae Young over. Those conversations were had at one point in time. And then I saw something today. You know, there were conversations about LeBron in a Mavericks uniform. And, you know, this thing can go so many different ways. I don't know. In some ways, I don't want to know unless it's from someone who does know. Not just speculating. I don't want to hear about the rumors and the conversations nearly as much. Let's just get this thing underway. I think everybody is pretty confident in the fact that we'll see him next year again. In what color uniform, I'm not sure. But adding some pieces to that roster is something I think they need. But I don't think they need as much as something. I don't think it all has to be about superstar status type players and things of that nature. I don't think it's necessarily going to take that. I think one or two little differences and shakeups on the roster, I think, and they'll be just fine to be ready to be right back there and compete again.
LeBron has won championships in Miami, in Cleveland, and with the Lakers.
Yeah.
And we know there have been some other guys who have moved around. Dennis Rodman certainly did, and we've seen it with a few other guys, Robert Horry, but if he could win a championship with a fourth different franchise, what would that say? I ask you as someone who does not think he is the GOAT, but if he could go somewhere else and Dallas or wherever and suddenly put them on top of the mountaintop, what would that say?
I think it would say a lot. It speaks volume about, you know, LeBron as a player. I don't think it would make much of a difference to me personally, because I already think that he's a fantastic, phenomenal. I'm not sure that there's even a word outside of greatest of all time to use there. But I will say enough, Jack, to say that he's won a championship in every uniform that he's put on.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that holds a lot of weight. And, you know, with some of the coaches. I mean, he didn't have the Phil Jackson, and he didn't have – you know, there's a lot of coaches out there that he didn't have. But give him credit, you know, for what he's been able to do. And I'm just ready to see embrace. You know, there's so many anti-LeBron guys. That's not me. There's so many pro-LeBron guys. That's probably not me either. I just kind of enjoy what he's been to this game. And I wish people would have that mentality a little bit more. Some people run around here, Jack, and act like he stole their girlfriend from them or something. You know, I don't understand that logic. Appreciate the game that is in front of us, because you just never know where this game is headed. And I'm not sure it's going in the best of places sometimes.
All right. Before we let you go, very quickly, in case someone just tuned in or missed it, your NBA Finals prediction is winner and games.
I'm going to go with the Miami Heat in six games.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm going to go Miami Heat.
Miami Heat in six games. You heard it there first from DeSean Tate.
It is recorded.
That's
yes.
Tate's Take Hoops. We got it
now
on
don't,
record.
Don't run with all your hard-earned producer money, Boston Rob, and go you call yourself Las Vegas Rob and run out there and take my prediction and go make a whole bunch of money out of it because you might be sadly disappointed.
He doesn't have much left after the Bruins and Celtics.
Right, exactly. I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel, DeSean. Don't worry about that.
Hey, Boston Rob, welcome to the party. I've been waiting on someone else to show up.